Every year or so, it seems, there's a date that one group of people is sure marks the end of the world. Some have tragic results, such as the Heaven's Gate Doomsday Cult. Others pass with an adjustment by the leader that, in fact, there was a miscalculation. There's a different end-of-the-world day to plan for. Might seem like a modern phenomenon, but in fact, hoaxes have been a big part of history practically as long as humans have. The first end-of-the-world prediction that we know of took place in 2800 BC. Ian Tattersall is a curator emeritus in the Division of Anthropology of the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, where he co-curates the Spitzer Hall of Human Origins. He and his co-author, Peter Navremont, have traced the history of these stories, a lot of different hoaxes and fake beliefs, in their new book, Hoax, A History of Deception, 5,000 Years of Fakes, Forgeries, and Fallacies. Ian, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, happy to be here.
Well, your day job, Ian, is presenting a lot of real stuff at a major museum. What got you into studying all this fake stuff?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, I'm a scientist by trade, and, you know, normally the stuff that I write has got a sort of a serious scientific component to it. And I think this is the first book I ever did purely for fun because there is a sort of this element of quirkiness in human history that we don't really pay a lot of attention to, but really it tells us a lot about ourselves when we actually look at it.
Now, why are we so susceptible to hoaxes? Sometimes the same hoax is going on for hundreds or even thousands of years.
Yeah, all the good ones run forever, no question about it. And I think that, but, you know, they are sort of out of the usual. And I think if one thing has sort of emerged from this new hoax culture that has been emerging in recent months, it's that what we respond to is the novel. We love new stories. And, of course, a hoax can be an old hoax, but it can be a new thing for every generation. And so we're used to hearing basically the same historical story over and over again. And then when we hear something new, something out of the ordinary, we respond to it.
And it seems like these things spread really well today on the Internet and social media, but we didn't need the Internet or social media to have hoaxes.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't, but it's really extraordinary, I find, that this book that we've just written was sort of conceived in a different world than the one that it was born into. We now sort of have a default assumption that all news is fake news, or at least to be viewed with some kind of skepticism, whereas previously we thought if we're getting news from a usually reliable source, we could usually rely on the news.
I want to get into a few of the, I think you've got 50 different examples of historical hoaxes in the book, historical and modern day, I should say. And I wanted to start with breatharianism, this idea that people can live without food or water just by breathing, and I think maybe some sunlight. I had seen news stories about people making this claim last year. The debunking site Snopes.com had a file on it, but this goes back much further than that.
Yes, indeed, and all kinds of sort of fad diets and so on go back a very long way. But this idea that you can live on the breath of God alone, which is where this this notion of breatharianism comes from, is actually a fairly recent one. It's been claimed way back into history that people could live without food. But the whole idea of breatharianism is that the breath of God is enough, and that you don't need even water under this notion. And that was first put about by a German Catholic nun called Theresa Neumann back in the 1920s. And it was an extreme version of this sort of ability to live without no food kind of diet, which essentially, in principle, eliminated the body taking in anything but air.
And people have been making this claim on and off since then, and there have been efforts to debunk, to show that, to find out that in one case, this person had a fridge full of food.
Oh, that's right. I mean, there's been plenty of cases where people have sort of been caught in the act. There was a guy called Wiley Brooks, who was the president of the Breatharian Institute of America, who was once allegedly seen leaving a 7-Eleven with a hot dog and a Diet Coke and Twinkies. So we can't necessarily believe that Breatharians practice what they preach.
Why would this one catch on? Because it seems pretty clear, and the evidence would stack up against you pretty quickly. If you live a long time without taking in nutrients or even water, things will go poorly.
That's a really, really good question. And why people should want to adhere to this kind of belief is, it's nothing short of mind-boggling. But if you really do adhere to this belief, it's fatal. I mean, there was a case not that long ago where a follower of an Australian breatharian called Jazz Mohin actually starved to death by the side of a lake, having recorded in her diary that this was her belief.
We are talking to Ian Tattersall, co-author of the new book, Hoax, A History of Deception. He's curator in the Museum of Natural History in New York in the anthropology department there. And Ian, I want to move on to another example. This one, you know, in a good thriller fiction book, we love a conspiracy theory. Dan Brown talked about this one, but it has a real world adherence to this idea of something called the Priory of Sion. Can you talk about that?
Yes, indeed. Actually, the Priory of Sion itself has a disappointingly short history. Of course, the whole conceit of the Dan Brown book goes right back to Jesus and the marriage of Jesus and to Mary Magdalene, and then Mary going to France and giving rise to the Merovingian dynasty, and so on and so on and so on. But this is basically a story that was concocted really back in its full form, you know, back in the 1960s. And so it doesn't go back a terribly long way.
And so talk about the origin of this story. Why did someone make this up, and why did it catch on?
Well, it goes back to a time when the priest in the village of Rennes-le-Château in southern France began reconstructing his dilapidated church using funds that he apparently got from trafficking in masses, which was sort of selling masses for the souls of the departed, which was very much frowned on by the Catholic authorities. But during this process of reconstruction, he found ancient documents that apparently bore evidence or documentary evidence of this marriage of Jesus and the history subsequently of his offspring. And local tradition had it that it was this money that we're paying for the renovations. And then a guy called Noel Corbu came into possession of this priest's residence and tried to turn it into a hotel. And a good selling point for the hotel, of course, was this this local legend involvement of the Merovingian dynasty. And then Corbu later on met a guy called Pierre Anastase Marie Pontard, who was a sort of a grifter who in the 1930s and the 1940s founded a number of sort of right-wing extremist groups in France. And these cliques that he set up became increasingly esoteric until in 1956, Pontard set up this grouping that he called the Priory of Sion, which he named for a local landmark. And it never really got very much traction, and eventually Pontard went to jail for child abuse. Now, then in the 1960s, Pontard was out of jail. He met Corbu, and by 1964, he was ready to remanufacture the Priory of Sion to his own advantage, and he manufactured this history of the Priory going back all the way to the Crusades. So a very long history based on this earlier tradition from Rennes-le-Château.
That fits. This all fits in, the fact that this caught on and then ended up in a novel and movies with Dan Brown. You know, you mentioned earlier, we know the history, we keep hearing, it seems commonplace, we learned it in school, we learned it in church. Oh, here's this intriguing alternate story. That's why something like this might be appealing to people?
Well, I think so. I think people are naturally attracted, as I mentioned before, by the unusual, by new twists on things. But whenever you see a new twist, you have to ask yourself, where did that new twist come from? And in this case, the new twist came from an entirely fabricated history that was made by this con man back in the essentially in the 1950s.
Let's jump to another story. We've been hearing people online in particular, again, making claims that the Earth is not a spherical shape. It is, in fact, a flat. And this goes way back. But ancient Greeks were already figuring out, right, that the Earth was globe-shaped. So why are we still having this argument today?
Well, another very, very good question. And I think sort of each of these vignettes into these strange things that people will believe sort of has its own moral and speaks for itself. In this case, it's very hard to know why there was this resistance. You know, Aristotle had already shown that in classical times that as a ship sailed over the horizons, its masts would be the last thing that disappeared from view, and that the Earth cast a spherical kind of or a curved kind of shadow on the moon during an eclipse and so on. Everybody sort of basically took for granted that the world was a globe, and Columbus knew the world was a globe when he set off on his voyages. And why people want to believe otherwise is something that I can only speculate about. And I come back always to the fact that if it's possible to think somebody out there is thinking it. You know, and there's a lot of people in the world, and therefore a lot of potential believers of very strange things.
Well, it's interesting to think that, you know, as people are tweeting things on their phone about a flat Earth, in many cases that tweet is going up into a series of satellites that go around the globe. It's kind of counterintuitive.
That's right. The rapper B.O.B. was a famous tweeter of flat Earth beliefs. And he says, there's no way that you can see all the evidence and not know. While, again, yeah, he's taking advantage of all this this satellite technology that depends on the Earth being a globe. Another of those cool ironies of human existence.
Ian, as we wrap up, you've written about 50 different hoaxes or type of hoaxes here. Mm-hmm. Is it your hope that by talking about them, you can help to debunk them, at least for some people?
Well, we're hoping that that people will read what we have written on these 50 different fakes, frauds, and fallacies, and draw their own conclusions. This is kind of a fun book. I hope it's as easy to read as it was fun to actually write it, and that we can give people a chance just to draw their own conclusions from presenting what we know about these 50 different, mainly disreputable episodes of human history.
Ian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Ian Tattersall is a curator emeritus in the Division of Anthropology of the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. He co-curates the Spitzer Hall of Human Origins there. He joins us to talk about some of the stories in his new book, Hoax, A History of Deception, 5,000 Years of Fakes, Forgeries, and Fallacies.